Yeah.
My name is Veruska Calabria, and I'm here today to interview Phil Cadman on the 28th of July 2010 on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One and Other Oral History Collection. And Phil, as you know, we are here to conduct a post-plinth interview, and we are doing it on the telephone, actually. So, Phil, just to bring you back, you went on the plinth to remember or to show the work of your pupils from the school where you work, right?
That's right, yep.
Yeah. And I was just really curious to know more about the reasons why you chose to do that on the plinth.
Because I've been a teacher for a year in a primary setting. I've been a qualified teacher for 16 years or so. But I'd actually moved into primary school teaching, and I just thought it'd be a really good opportunity to. I was given an opportunity to actually be in front of people and show people what I was or what I was doing now. So as much as lots of people thought I might get up there and take a guitar and do some songs and do things that I'd been doing for the last 10 years or so, I thought it'd be a really nice thing to do, to say, well, this is what I'm about now. I'm a teacher. So I decided to actually be a teacher up there and actually put the kids first and the kids' artwork and let them into the opportunity that I'd been given through the plinth experience.
Okay, thank you for that. So you mentioned that you got into a different kind of school or a kind of system. How does it compare then, what you were doing?
Well, basically, I'd spent my last good 5 years as a musician and running a music venue. So I'd actually gone into primary school teaching once I'd stopped doing the kind of rock and roll thing. So it was just really nice to actually stand up there and, you know, kind of say that this was what I'm about now. More of a teacher and less of a rock and roll.
And why was it important to you to do that?
I think at first, when I told people that I'd actually got some time on the plinth, it just felt that from the suggestions that people were giving me, you know, for what I should be doing up there, it was all about me, and it seemed, you know, to get up there and do some songs, to get up there and do some kind of entertainment to do, and it all seemed to be about projecting me, which I'd felt like I'd done enough of that, and now it was time to do the thing that all good teachers do and let the kids shine.
I see. So what prompted you then to train to become a teacher in the first place?
I've always wanted to be a teacher, and I think teaching and communicating ideas is something that I've always done in whatever work life that I've been in. You know, I've always involved myself in things that involve communicating to people.
So let's go back to your career in music. You talked about it in the pre-plinth interview, but we never found out how it all happened.
What happened, sorry?
How did you get into music?
I've always been. I grew up in quite a musical church background. So I grew up, and my earliest memories are of singing in church, of playing instruments in church, of wanting to be just like my older foster brothers or my older friends. Is, you know, playing music. So I've always played music for a lot, from, you know, from way back. And to, you know, to use that as a vehicle for communicating to people and songwriting is something that I've always done.
So just to bring me back, you began to write songs when you were very young, did you?
Yeah. I think it was probably about 13, 14.
Okay, and so did you always know that you wanted to do that?
I just find it as a really good way of looking at how I was thinking, of kind of a way of journaling my thoughts and dealing with things and communicating to people. I do find songwriting incredibly therapeutic, but also a way of then taking those ideas and communicating them to people.
Do you play any instruments?
I mainly play the guitar. That's my main songwriting instrument, but I treat my songwriting as my instrument.
And were you ever able to have a career out of your music, songwriting?
I did. It did put a part of the meal on the table. But I, like I say, I spent nearly 4 years running my own music venue, just to be immersed in music and be part of a music community.
So tell me more about running this venue. How did it all happen?
It was part of, going back probably 11 years ago now, I was part of a music collective in my hometown of Wigan, one of the founder members of a music collective. And out of that, we started putting nights on in the town with local musicians and then regional musicians and then international and national musicians. So it was it worked quite well. And from that, the place that we actually used as our venue came up, became available to run as a business as well. So I stepped forward and took it on as a business.
And what did you like about doing that?
What I really enjoyed about it was that I was involved in music, as you know, as a career. A 24/7 kind of existence in music and promoting music and bringing artists and musicians and poetry and comedy and you know trying to create that artistic community within a venue. And that's what I liked is the production, the producing, and putting on events. It worked quite well.
Okay, so just to go back now to your life story, you know, your parents, and are you originally from Wigan?
I am, yes, yeah.
And so were your parents as well?
Yes, both Wigan born and bred.
And what did your parents do, or if they're still alive, I don't know?
They're both still alive. My mum and my dad have always been foster carers. That's what they've done. But also bakers and confectioners and lots of things within the kind of catering industry.
I was very interested in the fact that you've also done quite a lot of different things with your life. You mentioned that you'd gone traveling around the world when you were in your 20s, and then that you were a mechanical engineer as well.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Okay, I was a mechanical engineer for the first 4.5 years of my working life till I was about 21. Yeah, I've got a short attention span. So, I not that I get bored easily, but when I achieve in things, I usually find that I need to move on to another challenge or something different. So, you know, after being a mechanical engineer, I found it very easy to find the longest course at university that I could spend my time there playing rugby and being a student.
And then you also mentioned being an educational researcher at one point.
Yeah, I hung about at university after I finished my degree and stayed on as an educational researcher for a couple of years, which was really good because it allowed me to continue doing, you know, academic work, where sometimes I think people rush straight off their degree course and don't get given the chance to actually fully try out their academic skills and to, you know, and kind of road test in a more free, open-ended way what they've just learned in an academic sense. So I got a chance to hang around for another couple of years as an educational researcher at the university, which was cool.
And when, at what point did you then take on the leather goods company?
That was after I got married and came back home to Wigan from Nottingham. And then my mother-in-law, as she has wont to do, bought herself a leather goods company. And because of that, one night she decided that she didn't have enough time to actually run it. So she asked me, did I fancy doing that? So I did do. And for a good 4 years, I think it was, in all, ran the leather goods company, making handbags and leather accessories for 4 years.
You mentioned that in your pre-plinth interview that you were approaching your 40, actually, your 40th birthday just before your time on the plinth. And, of course, now it's 1 year on. And
yep.
I wanted to ask you, because I think you mentioned that you're still changing and life is all about changing. So what's been happening in the last year?
In the last year, I think I've developed a greater commitment to teaching. I think my biggest change over this last year or so is to get involved in the process of what's happening to me, rather than just the achievement and the attainment. Because, like I say, quite a few times in my life, I've achieved and achieved well and achieved not particularly easily but quickly. And once that achievement's hit me, I've got bored and wanted to look for something else. But the thing about primary school teaching and the teaching that I'm doing at the moment, is even in the day-to-day activities, almost in the process of achieving, those challenges are fantastic. And I think that's been the biggest change in me in the last year or so, is to actually get more involved in the process of what's happening rather than the outcome, rather than the, you know, the goal or the achievement. And it's great, you know, less goal orientated, more enjoying the ride at the moment.
Can you give me some examples then of this change?
I think there's a stability and an acceptance that comes with it, that you're not frustrated with the day-to-day things because they're all part of it. I used to find it very easy to get frustrated with day-to-day activities because they weren't going anywhere or they weren't achieving something. But, you know, these days, maybe with age as well, it's just really nice to actually enjoy the process a little bit more.
Thanks for that, Phil. If I can just bring you back now to the time on the plinth.
Yep.
Do you remember what it was like to be up there?
I did. It was quite strange in the way that you were quite. I expected to be more on my own than I was, and I was looking forward to kind of an hour's worth of being alone in a crowd, but that didn't happen. As soon as I was up there, it just, you know, the I did take my BlackBerry up with me, so as soon as I was up there, the Facebook went wild, and texts and emails started hitting me. So it was quite it was quite a strange thing to be. How can I put it? That I was, you know, it wasn't the communication with the people who were around me and the immediacy, you know, in the square. It was the communication and the kind of points of contact with people who weren't there, who were, you know, who hit me digitally and contacted me in other ways. I found that unexpected.
Are you saying that people were contacting you on social networking sites during your time on the plinth?
Yeah. It literally, after five or 10 minutes, my BlackBerry basically went wild. People, you know, demanding that I wave to the camera. You know, people actually, you know, choosing, trying not to believe that it was actually me up there. And it was, you know, through the Facebook and emails. There was quite a lot of contact.
So, you know, when you got a place on the plinth, you got sent a booklet to encourage you to contact your local press, media, newspapers, and your communities and so on. Did you do any of that?
I didn't, no, mainly because it's a strange one, because there were so many people who were expecting me to make it about me being on the plinth, that I didn't want to just rush to the paper and say, hey, I'm on the plinth. What I'd like to do is, and moving the house at the moment, I've got all my plinth stuff in a box. And one of the things that I was going to do over the holidays was bring it to an end, or think about what it was, and make some kind of collage or a montage out of the outcomes, or the bits and pieces that are around it, like the t-shirts and the stuff off the net, and texts and other bits and pieces, and maybe then actually go to the press and actually say, you know, there's a book coming out, these kids have had their artwork, you know, they've been part of an international piece with an international artist, you know, haven't these kids done well? So I'm still very reluctant to go to the press, because, you know, I don't think it was my opportunity to put me forward. But I think there's a way to go to the press to actually say, haven't these kids done so well? Haven't these kids done a good job to be part of an international art event like this?
You mentioned Facebook. I assume you must have posted something on there to say you were going on the plinth?
I did. I basically, the main way I communicated was with a round robin text to everybody, a group text, and on the Facebook as well. Yeah.
So were you aware that there were two online groups of people following the Plinth project, both participants as well as just followers? There was one on Facebook and one on Twitter.
Yeah, I was, but it's a strange thing. Again, I don't feel that I was up there kind of as me. Do you know what I mean? So for me to actually join a group to say, hey, I'm one of the Plinthers, feels really strange. Although I'm privileged and I feel it's great to have been part of it, I feel that it was less a part of me and more about what we did with the kids. So to actually have been part of a Facebook group would have felt, you know, as a Plinther. I didn't feel like a Plinther. I didn't feel like part of that group.
I see. How about following the project? Did you watch it at all during the course of it?
I did. I actually went. I logged onto the website quite a few times to see what was happening, to see what people were doing. I found it very interesting. And it guided me towards what I wanted to do as well. As much as it's about being on a plinth, and it was to show, kind of, I wanted to show where I was at that moment in my life, and not to make a statement, because I didn't want to make a statement because there were so many people who made good and fantastic and meaningful and heavyweight statements on the plinth. But if I tried to make a statement, I think it would have belittled what they were doing as well. So that's, you know, that's another reason why I kind of handed over the opportunity to the kids to actually do the artwork and let them develop or, you know, be part of that opportunity.
How did you come up with the idea?
We'd actually, for that year and the year before, we'd actually studied the field and made our own field sculpture within the school using a lot smaller models. I think as a graphic, as an aesthetic thing, the gathering of lots of people's little clay models just looks fantastic. And with 7 and 8 year olds, it's a great little piece to do a homage to. So we, for this year and the year before, we'd actually all created our own clay models and made our own version of the field. So as a class, we were aware of Anthony Gormley. And also the parents, some of the parents of the kids who were in my class and were in my class last year, had actually taken part in the original modelling of clay creatures for the original field, or one of the original fields. So that's why we got into that idea. To, you know, the kids of the kids who'd actually created the first clay models to kind of carry that on.
So presumably you had the children of the school watching you during your time on the plinth?
They were, and a few other of the schools around the place, around St. Helens, because of colleagues and family friends. There were quite a few people tuned in.
So did you find out the impact that he had on the children?
The children found it strange and it was, I think, because it was such a tight, they didn't see it as an event. How can I put it? If they were in Trafalgar Square looking at a person up on the plinth, then they would, I think that impact would have been great. But for it to be confined to a computer screen or a TV screen, I think it just became another product of TV. I think it devalued it a bit. But 4 weeks ago, I took another group of kids down to London for a few days, and we went past the plinth on our way to the London Eye, from Downing Street to the London Eye, and we stopped, and I explained to them what we did, and it kind of, because we were there, and because we weren't interacting through a computer screen or a TV screen, it just came alive to them, and they kind of, they understood it more so, because, you know, it became of a greater value because they were actually stood underneath the plinth and saw how important that place was within the geography and the community that is the UK.
Now, how about the impact on yourself having gone on the plinth?
The physical thing of going on the plinth was an event. It was that physical, you know, game. But I actually think the run up to it, and again, looking at what people expected me to do when I was up there, and thinking about what I wanted to do when I was up there, and thinking about why I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I was up there, you know, I think it allowed me a nice opportunity to be quite not just introspective, because you know, people reacted to my opportunity. It wasn't just me thinking about my opportunity. Lots of people, it created a lot of discussion. It created a lot of ways of me looking at what I'm doing and looking at me from other people's perspective, which I thought did have an impact on me, and allowed me to actually go, no, that's not how I see myself. I'm not going to do that because of this reason or that reason. So it allowed myself to be explained to other people a little bit better, I think.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about this issue about the way you were seeing yourself and how it affected yourself, perhaps through examples?
Well, basically, I'd spent 4 years communicating my ideas through my songs, and that involved a lot of ego and a lot of fronting different musical kind of ventures. So a lot of people knew me and experienced me, stood on a stage and communicating that way. And I think very, very easily people assume that you're a certain type of person. And, you know, I didn't get on a stage just to be a rock and roll star. I got on a stage to communicate ideas, to actually communicate an artistic idea or communicate, some kind of thought process. So, but it was still, as much as I, you know, thought that I was doing something very worthy, still people thought that it was, quite an egotistical trip to have been on, and that I would use the opportunity on the plinth as an egotistical trip again. But it gave me opportunity to actually say, no, my rock and roll years weren't about that. It was about this. This is why I did it. This is why I enjoyed it. This is what I got out of it. So, it gave me an opportunity to explain myself a bit to people.
Well, thanks. So what would you say you got out of those years when you wrote your songs and you were in the music field?
I think I've developed something that is it's a mirror for myself. It's my sounding board. It's my way of getting my ideas together to see what I really think. So it's an artistic vehicle for something that is reasonably introspective. It's my songwriting, my journaling. It's my getting my ideas down on a piece of paper to see what I'm thinking and to sharpen up those ideas, maybe communicate those ideas to people. So that's what my songwriting and performing has been and still is now. It's my way of kind of making sense of what's going on in my head in a with a little bit of an artistic pursuit.
So what would you say your songs have been about?
Incredibly eclectic. Incredibly eclectic. There's never been one particular theme. I couldn't pin it down. It hasn't been. It's never been about one theme. It's been very incredibly eclectic. But usually very narrative. Trying to communicate some kind of idea. Or this is what I think, what do you think? Kind of attitude.
Thank you for that. I just wanted to ask you about your family. How did they see this experience?
It was great because the kids came down with us and they kind of took the whole day's event in as well. Artistic pursuit and kind of being involved with things like this has been part of the kids' lives, ever since they can remember. So to see myself up there, and then Louisa followed me. My wife followed me up there straight away after as well, because a place came free. And they begged her to go up onto the plinth. So they saw both of us up there on the plinth. And they don't necessarily question the enormity of it all. They just, it's mum and dad involved in musical, artistic kind of pursuits as they always have been and do.
So what would you say the project was about, in your opinion?
I think it was a chance for people to represent, a chance for people to say, this is what's important to me. This is what's important to me, as part of my culture, my place, my time. And that's what I kind of got from people. So whether people were making grandiose statements, political statements, or whether they were just up there being, or whether they were sharing their pursuits, their hobbies, or whatever, I just thought it was a really good... I love the idea of it, of actually being able to represent people's humanity as they saw fit. The things that were important to them, and you know, it brought about a real kind of, it gave a canvas to a real great mix and great palette of humanity up there.
And is there anything else you'd like to add about the experience of going on the plinth that perhaps I haven't asked you about but may have come up to mind just by talking about it?
I enjoyed, one thing that I really, really enjoyed was to be part of something where people were so enthusiastic about the thing that they were part of. You know, it's very easy to be involved in events and happenings and work and career, and you know, these people who were putting you up onto the plinth, who were talking to you, who were dealing with you, it was all a real deep knowing kind of honest appreciation of what they were doing. And you know, enjoyment of what they were doing, which I really, really enjoyed. I really enjoyed being not just part of it, but part of their enjoyment of it as well.
So your wife went up as well?
She did, yes.
Yeah, so tell me more about her.
In what respect?
You know, what does she do and how did you meet?
She's a teacher, a primary school teacher, and we both met because we played in bands together.
And whereabouts did you meet?
Well, we met through church circles. Nearly 20, 25 years ago.
And what was it like for her to go up there? Since I've got you on the telephone, it'd be interesting to find out how her experiences, you know, of the plinth compared to yours.
Do you want to speak to her?
Well, possibly not, because I would have to get her consent.
Right.
I'm just asking you, you know, what you might have talked to each other. And
I think she was thrown into it. And I think with all good art, you've got to think about it a bit first. And she was very happy to go up on the plinth and very happy just to sit and read a book and spend an hour on her own and just enjoying the, you know, the peace and quiet and the solitude of, you know, of being alone in a crowd kind of thing. So she was, I think she enjoyed that. She enjoyed because of Louisa's musical background and because of her studies at university, she did art history and was, you know, we've travelled Europe looking at things that we've read in books and studied at university. So it was really nice. To be part, I think she loved being part of something that was a follow-on from some of her favourite artists, like Rachel White-Reed. She loves sculpture, and you know, we have travelled and followed Anthony Gormley's work, so to be part of it was a privilege for both of us.
Oh, that's brilliant. And Philip, you mentioned the church a couple of times. Are you religious?
Particularly not religious, no. I'd like to think that I'm quite spiritual, but definitely I don't do things because I have to. I'm not very observant. You know, I don't have a pattern of religious observance or feel that I need to do, you know, just because of my faith. But I do, you know, I do believe in something bigger than myself. You know, I do believe, you know, even in the creativity that we're all part of, and the things that we make and bring into being and produce. It's just, I think it's part of something that's bigger than us. You know, however people want to define that, I want to keep that spiritual window open. That has an impact, you know, and I do think it, opening yourself up to something like that, gives you a bit of grace, gives you a bit of humility.
When you mentioned doing music through the church, what denomination of church were you following then?
It was a free church, basically quite an evangelical church that was basically a kind of a house church movement.
Okay, I thought I'd ask you one more question about being a teacher, actually, since, of course, it was a very important part of you on the plane for what you chose to do. You mentioned that you were planning a lesson for your National Poetry Day on the following day on the plinth.
Yeah.
While you were up there. Did you get that done?
I don't think I did. I can't really remember that being an outcome of the time that I was on the plinth. I know I was going to do that, and I know it was National Poetry Day, but I can't think of it as being part of the outcome of the day. I can't remember actually doing that lesson or what that lesson was about.
Is that right?
As much as poetry is a very big part of, I'm quite passionate about poetry, and it's a big part of my literacy teaching. No, I can't remember that lesson.
What sort of poetry do you teach in schools?
It depends. It depends what I'm teaching and what reasons I might be using the text. So I've done performance poetry, which would have included raps, and also because of that, for the kids to understand about rhyming couplets. And you know how to hit rhymes and patterns and rhythms of rhymes. We've actually looked at Macbeth, quite a lot of different forms of poetry. We've written poetry about what we can see in the clouds. We've written poetry about what things will change. So we've looked out of a window and had a think about what things are going to be there tomorrow and what things are still going to be there. We've wrote poems about change. So it's and we've wrote songs as well. You know, which at the end of the day are just poems with music to them. We use an awful lot of poetry, or we play with words, we paint with words, as poetry is, quite a lot in year three.
Now, just as a closing question, what would you say that you love about being a teacher?
I like the opportunity to communicate ideas. To get people to value opinion and value ideas and not just take them on board, but use those ideas in different contexts and combine ideas and combine learning to create new ideas. I like being that person who can actually communicate what I think is a value, because, you know, because lots of people will put value onto things depending on the perspective, but just things that I just enjoy and that I'm passionate about and enthused about, and, you know, get the kids to enjoy, you know, writing, to enjoy drawing, to enjoy the mystery of maths, you know, just to get enthused about things that I find particularly interesting. You know, as a teacher, I don't want to teach kids the things that they could go home and do at home. You know, I want to actually not make that cliche statement to make a difference, but that if they're going to come into my room and be taught by me, that they get something that, you know, can really only be taught by me, and, you know, or else it just might as well be somebody else, or they might as well stay at home if it's an activity they could do on the kitchen table. Well, why come to school? So, you know, the big difference between home and school is me and the environment that we create at the school. So we try hard as a school to actually create opportunities and experiences and learning outcomes that they just wouldn't get at home, and they wouldn't get anywhere else as well. And that's what I enjoy as a teacher, but particularly being in the school that I'm at, the chance to actually be me.
Thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed the interview.
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your time tonight, and good luck with the move as well.
Yes, thank you very much. We've got another 2 days of it left yet, so we'll get there eventually.
Oh, fantastic.